Have you ever felt haunted by something that should exist but doesn't? That gnawing sense that the world, or your corner of it, could be fundamentally different if only someone would act? This isn't restlessness or ambition talking. It's the birth cry of vision, and it begins not with clarity, but with discomfort. Consider Nehemiah, an ancient cupbearer who heard news of Jerusalem's shattered walls and wept for days. His tears weren't mere sadness. They were the emotional earthquake that precedes transformation. Similarly, the Wright brothers didn't wake up one morning with blueprints for an airplane. They spent years obsessed with the problem of human flight. Vision always starts here, with a burden so persistent it demands response, a holy discontent that refuses to be silenced. This emotional investment distinguishes genuine vision from passing fancy. When you can't stop thinking about what should be, when the gap between reality and possibility keeps you awake at night, you're not being dramatic, you're being called. Here's the paradox. Urgent visions rarely demand immediate action. Nehemiah waited 4 months before approaching the king. Moses spent 40 years in the desert before leading Israel. Paul disappeared for 3 years after his Damascus Road experience. What feels like wasted time is actually the crucible where character catches up to calling. During these waiting periods, vision matures within us while we mature into people capable of carrying it. This isn't passive waiting, it's active preparation. Nehemiah didn't just pray. He researched, planned, and developed a 7-step strategy for an impossibly audacious goal. He investigated who controlled building materials, calculated costs, and mapped political alliances, all while still serving wine to a king. The waiting period serves as authentication. Does this burden intensify or fade? Does investigation confirm or contradict your sense of calling? Divine visions connect to God's master plan, whether through family, ministry, or marketplace transformation. Until you align with His purpose rather than personal ambition, there will always be a hole no secular success can fill. When circumstances stall your vision, two disciplines sustain it: prayer and strategic planning. Prayer keeps you alert to divine intervention. Planning prepares you to seize opportunities. Nehemiah prayed for favor with King Artaxerxes, not asking God to rebuild walls himself, but for the chance to participate. This separates visionaries from dreamers. Visionaries envision themselves making a difference, not just wishing for change. Simultaneously, Nehemiah developed detailed plans, securing his release, funding, safe passage, materials, authority, and workers. Prayer without planning becomes passive wishful thinking. Planning without prayer leads to self-reliance. When your vision stalls, these twin disciplines provide oxygen. New visions die easily without visible progress, and when your vision dies, part of you dies too. Your sense of purpose diminishes. The what always precedes the how. You'll know what God has placed in your heart long before understanding how He'll bring it about. Many visions die in this gap, but divine visions require divine intervention. What God originates, He orchestrates. Every God-ordained vision initially appears impossible. That's the point. The gap between your resources and requirements creates dependency on divine intervention. Nehemiah questioned his cupbearer role when called to build, yet God had strategically positioned him from childhood, granting access to the one person whose permission he'd need. You're successful every day you show up faithfully, not just when vision materializes. Chris, a high school senior with zero social leverage, envisioned sharing the gospel with every student. Though lacking influence, he faithfully shared one-on-one, befriending Mark, an angry transfer student others avoided. After Chris graduated, Mark was unexpectedly invited to speak at a school assembly, sharing his testimony with the entire student body, fulfilling Chris's vision in a way neither could have orchestrated. Your current position, however unlikely, may be precisely where God needs you. Waiting time is never wasted when God has placed a vision in your heart. Faith isn't mystical power, it's confidence in God's character and promises. Embracing vision before seeing results is worship, especially when circumstances seem contrary. The more unlikely a vision's fulfillment, the greater faith required, and the more glory God receives. When King Artaxerxes asked what Nehemiah wanted, his first response was prayer. Despite rehearsing his request countless times, he remained dependent on God. When granted his requests, Nehemiah immediately credited the good hand of my God. This dependency becomes challenging when vision becomes reality. Success distorts perspective, breeding self-sufficiency. Truett Cathy exemplified sustained dependence. Starting with the Dwarf Grill in 1946, he recognized God's providential help from day one. When Chick-fil-A faced its first sales decline, he and his team established their corporate purpose: to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted to us. 6 months later, sales increased 40%. The end of a God-ordained vision is God Himself, requiring us to trust not just in the vision, but in the one who planted it. God-ordained visions must be shared. Nehemiah's approach reveals four essential components. First, clearly state the problem. You see the bad situation we are in. Vision casting means waking people from apathy by helping them see problems with fresh eyes. Second, propose a solution. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. While problems engage the mind, solutions engage imagination. Third, connect to deeper values. Nehemiah appealed to identity, that we may no longer be a reproach. When you discover the why behind your vision, it transforms from what could be into what should be. Finally, address timing by pointing to God's orchestration. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me. People commit sacrificially to visions bearing God's fingerprints. The most significant visions aren't cast by great orators, but at children's bedsides, in mentoring conversations, and through consistent words pointing people toward their God-given potential. Vision faces three primary threats: distractions, criticism, and moral compromise. When Nehemiah neared completion of Jerusalem's wall, enemies invited him to a deadly trap. His response: "I am doing a great work and I cannot come down." The most dangerous distractions are good opportunities that pull us from the best things. Grant, a talented salesman, left a lucrative position because the 6-day work week conflicted with his family vision. While former colleagues received large payouts when the company sold, many had lost their families. Criticism represents the second challenge. Nehemiah faced false accusations but responded, "Such things as you are saying have not been done, but you are inventing them in your own mind." He turned to God, "But now, O God, strengthen my hands." The best way to silence critics is completing your vision. The third challenge involves maintaining moral authority, alignment between conviction and behavior. Nehemiah's moral authority came from his 12-year commitment to forego privileges previous governors had exploited. Developing moral authority requires character, the will to do what's right, sacrifice, demonstrating commitment, and time, building credibility through consistent choices. Moral authority is fragile and can be lost in a single decision, yet it's essential for sustaining vision through inevitable opposition. While we execute our visions, God works on a parallel plan that gives deeper significance to our efforts. When Nehemiah completed the wall in 52 days, surrounding nations lost their confidence and recognized God's hand in the work accomplished through hard work and divine intervention, without supernatural miracles. What was once Israel's role as light to the nations has transferred to individual believers. As we pursue our visions, we should live in ways that cause others to recognize something divine in our lives. Three qualities consistently attract attention: peace amid difficulty, healthy relationships in a relationally challenged world, and character that does what's right, regardless of cost. If you feel tension between what is and what could be, if you're emotionally involved and believe God is behind that anguish, you're likely on the brink of something divine. Everybody ends up somewhere in life, but you can end up somewhere on purpose. The journey from burden to blueprint isn't easy, but it's where you'll discover not just what you can accomplish, but who God created you to become.